You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right. $25 a month? Every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
Greetings, Earthlings. Welcome back to the Waveform Podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Marquez.
And I'm Andrew, and I did not approve of that intro.
It's just the way it's going this week. This week we got a guest on, actually.
Yeah?
Who's your favorite car YouTuber?
You.
Oh, wow. That's just such a nice, flattering answer to that. My favorite is Doug DeMuro.
Yeah, I think that's everybody's
You've
favorite.
Seen me watching his videos.
I watch his videos. Yeah. I know lots of people that watch his videos.
I think every car video for the past 2 years that I've put out has had at least one section inspired by his videos. Usually when I go through quirks and features, but also when I went through the McLaren, I did a whole Doug DeMuro inspired section. Big fan. If you guys haven't seen his videos before, we'll of course link his channel in the show notes, but got a chance to talk to him. I feel like we have a lot in common actually, because we are YouTubers, but not just YouTubers. We're YouTubers who make videos about products.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of like the thing that we bond over. And so in this conversation, we talk all about that kind of stuff, about car culture versus tech culture, about being a creator online, about the uncertainty of it, about getting recognized in public. There's all sorts of fun quirks and things that we realize we have in common.
I'm really excited. He is also he's the perfect first guest to do the Type the ABC challenge because it's literally inspired by Top Gear, and I'm sure having a car YouTuber doing our first Top Gear-esque challenge.
It's perfect.
It's perfect.
It's perfect.
Can't wait.
So yeah, we'll see how he does. But without any further ado, Doug DeMuro. All right, cool, sick. Well, welcome to the Waveform Podcast. It's been a long time coming. First of all, I've watched your videos for many years. I was never a car person until probably like 2016, and then I got a car I was really into and started watching way more car videos. So that's obviously what led me to find your channel. I'm sure that's how a lot of people also do. But Doug, I mean, for those unfamiliar, for a couple of people who haven't seen a Doug DeMuro video, how do you have like a 2-minute version of like, here's what I do, maybe when someone asks you in the street or you have to explain to a family member or something, how would you describe what you do?
I'm very sheepish when I have to explain it to normal people, but the general gist is that I review cars, and it's sort of an unusual way. I like kind of show all of like a bunch of little, as opposed to just like driving it, like, oh, this is really fast. I like show a bunch of little details and stuff that maybe you would encounter if you actually like owned the car, wanted to spend some time with it or whatever. And I think that is a little bit unique. And I've been able to do crazy cars from normal stuff to multi-million-dollar cars. That you don't always get a chance to see all those little details. It's kind of cool.
I like that. I mean, I think we have a lot in common. I also have a YouTube channel, and my videos are very product-based, which I think is a unique part of YouTube because there's a lot of people who are vlogging and are trying to make the lifestyle as exciting as possible. There's a lot of other sort of topical channels and things like that. But when we get a product, which is the car or in your case, or the gadget in my case, that dictates like about as exciting as the video can be is like how exciting that thing is. Do you think about that at all? Is that like, do you feel an extra pressure to be like a better version of Doug today? Or is it kind of like the car will do the talking?
That's an interesting question. I never really thought about that distinction between the product people and the vlog people. But I guess you're right. For the vlog people, their vlog and their personality is their product, basically. But for me, it's maybe a little bit easier in the sense that I like have something that I can talk about the whole time. So if I don't have anything interesting that day, like the car is interesting. That like really never really struck me. In terms of like, yeah, being like on and stuff, yeah, I mean, it can be a little... sometimes you show up and you just don't want to do it. I'm sure you have this. There's some days where you're just tired and you're like, I don't know. But sometimes the car totally pulls me out of that. And it's like, this is actually a lot of fun.
I'm glad. Like, you're not jaded or anything. Like, you enjoy, like, as many cars as you possibly can still.
I can't believe it. But after 8 years, I'm not even slightly jaded. I still pull up, even to, like, review a minivan. And I'm like, all right. Like, I'm pumped. Let's go. I don't know how that lasted so long. Or do you feel?
No, I was thinking that. I don't think I am. There is a level of like experience that comes with it, because there's a part of the tech world where like the reaction to the novelty of something new will kind of be a part of the video. Like some new feature will happen in a phone, and you're supposed to react accordingly based on how interesting or impressive that thing is. And a lot of times, like something pretty cool, like they put cameras behind the display now. So like instead of having a hole punch cutout, it'll just be like magically seamlessly behind the screen. And the camera won't take the best photos, and I'm like, I can kind of see it from the side, so I'm like not really raving about it. But then half the comments are like, this is incredible. Like, how are you not like amazed by the craziness that we're seeing in front of us? So it's kind of a balancing act of like remembering to not remembering to be impressed, but to remember the context, right, of like not everybody has seen all this stuff, you know?
Right. That was the reason I started doing these like quirks and features videos. I would watch car reviews and there would be some button that looked insane that I, you know, had a symbol on it. I didn't know what it did, but they wouldn't, because that person had been in three of those models, you know, by the same brand before, they knew what that did. It wasn't interesting to them. I was like, you know, I want to start talking about this stuff like it's to somebody who is like coming at it from a fresh. And so sometimes people are like, how could you still be surprised by whatever feature? And it's like, I don't know. I still am. Maybe I'm just an idiot.
I like that I can watch any one of your videos and you don't actually need the context of any other video. You know, like if you watch, right, a tech video reviewing the Galaxy S21, a lot of stuff will refer back to the S20 and you kind of have to remember what that was like. And I feel like any video of yours that I watch, even if I've never been in any other car by that manufacturer, I can slowly get to know all of the pieces of that car, which is kind of cool. I wouldn't get that anywhere else.
It's a tough thing to do, though, and I'm sure you have a difficult time with this also, because some people watch every video. And if you are repetitive, they're like, you already talked about that in this video, in this video, in this video. And it's like, okay. But then some people watch, this is the first time they've watched. And so it's a tough balance to try to make that work. Like, do I talk about this again, even though I just did 3 months ago? Yeah. Or, and you're going to get complaints. Yeah, it's just kind of got to.
Do you dig into the numbers at all, like the YouTube analytics and all that stuff?
Yeah, insanely. I've got spreadsheets.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? What do you? So, yeah, what is your ratio of returning on a new upload? Maybe let's say a week old video. What is your ratio of new viewers versus repeat?
You know, that actually I don't know offhand, but. But it's enough that a good chunk of them are returning viewers, and then a good chunk are. And also, it depends a lot on the car. If it's something that's sort of like I just did a review the other day of a 1986 Nissan Maxima. That's going to be people who are like Doug fans. Yep. You know, that's not. But if it like I'm doing the Bronco videos going up tomorrow, that's going to be a ton of new people who just want content on this new car. And so it depends greatly on the vehicle. And so I kind of try to think of that, too. But it's still so difficult. I mean, the problem is when you have audiences the size of mine, and obviously yours is even bigger, like there's so, God, it's just so difficult to figure out how, and this comes with experience breeds the, you know, you figure out eventually like what people want, whatever. But I still sometimes am like blown away that something became something. I'll post a video, talk about it. And like, well, something will be a minute in the video and I won't even think about it. And that will be the thing everybody talks about. Yeah. I'm like, I didn't even, it's, that stuff kind of blows me away.
No, yeah. Sometimes. We literally just had a moment like that. I guess I can't talk about it yet because it's not out yet, but we just saw a new phone come out and there wasn't that much cool stuff, but there's like one kind of neat feature that we grazed over. And we're like, wait a second, that's actually kind of amazing. Yeah. I want to ask you make your videos, I'm going to guess because I don't know, but that you shoot them with an iPhone. Is that right?
I shoot, it's kind of complicated. The stand-up shots, so the ones where I'm standing next to the car going, you know, this is whatever, I have a camcorder for that. And the ones that I'm standing in, sitting inside the car where it's shoot, anytime I'm appearing on screen, the camcorder is shooting it. On the little overlay shots where you see me touch the button or turn on the headlights or whatever, that is always with an iPhone. And you know, the funny thing about that is people get angry when they find out that I'm shooting this with an iPhone. They're like, this isn't professional. But they'll only realize when that happened when they see it in reflection. And it's like, you've been watching my videos for 2 years.
Never would have known. Exactly.
Yours is a big deal.
Yeah. No, I kind of admire that a little bit. Like, I go out to shoot a car video sometimes, and I am so used to this like production of like, how can I make the best video possible, that it's a little bit daunting. Like, it weighs on me a little bit. Like, we have all this gear, and then suddenly it's like, now we have to worry about every single little thing, because if we're going to this height, we might as well go to this height. So part of me wants to just like shoot a whole car video with my phone and not even like think twice about it. So I kind of love that. How long?
I always tell people that quality, the thing is, you're making videos to a tech audience, and so they're going to notice quality a little bit more, I think. I don't necessarily have that. I don't necessarily have that problem. So people don't seem to care. You got to have a certain standard, but you don't have to be as insane as I expected and as insane as some people think. People email me and they're like, I've got this piece of equipment and that and this drone, whatever, and I'm gonna make the best car videos. And I'm like, that's not necessarily what people are after. You might be surprised. The content is really, to me, is always kind of more important. King.
So, okay, for a 20-minute video, how long does that take you to make? Well, you have a shoot, you have a writing process too, but how long does everything take you?
It takes about 2 hours to write a script and research everything. And the script is really only the intros, but it's also some research to figure out like, what is this car about? And then I go to wherever it is, and it's very rarely local. So, you know, a couple hours on the road, and then I get up there. It takes about 4 to 5 hours to film a video, depending on how, complicated the car is. Older stuff without touchscreens is easier. It's quicker. Modern cars, people want a little bit more in depth on like how does stuff work, that kind of thing. And then the editing process, I finally hired an editor. I was doing it all myself up until last year. I finally hired an editor. And it used to take me about the same amount of time to edit, 3 to 4 hours to edit a video and post it.
Was that your first addition to the team, having an editor straight to the top with an editor?
Yeah, pretty much. My best friend also reads my emails, which is helpful. So she's sort of my assistant to an extent, reads my emails. And then I have my editor. How big is your team?
So currently not 9, including me. But I am the editor still. So that's like the weird, that's what I always get flack for, is like, all right, there's so much to do. There is the writing and researching, and I have help with that, which is great. There is also like the shooting, which there's all kinds of angles and stuff I can't get. So I have help with that. And there's set design, and there's all sorts of like animation and things inside videos. But as far as like the base cut and like who's making the video, that's me in front of the computer for 6 hours. So yeah, wow. I feel like that's something that like, it's hard to give up as a YouTuber. I don't know if you.
I didn't want to give it up. And in fact, I loved editing.
Yeah.
If I had time, cause I just launched this like car auction website. And if I wasn't doing that, I would still be doing the edit. I loved it. It's like putting together a puzzle, and you kind of shape it and shape it and shape it. By the end, you have this like, this thing. And I found that to be probably more enjoyable than actually shooting. It just was the one, I can't farm out the shooting, obviously. And so it made sense to farm out the editing. It was too bad, but
I'm glad there's still YouTubers that are out there editing and missing editing. how much do you get to experiment inside of your videos then? Cause you clearly have the format, and you have the Doug score, and you have the driving section, and you have quirks and features that I like expect you to hit, even if I know nothing about the car. Do you feel like you have to do a video a certain way on the main channel, or is that sort of like?
Yeah, but you know what? The big benefit is that's actually what I enjoy the most. I started off doing all these crazy videos. I would run over cars, and all sorts of crazy stuff. And I just sort of refined and refined to the point where I got to what my audience liked the most. And it just by chance, it's also what I like the most. I like to see what all the little buttons do. I like to see how everything is controlled, how the gadgets all work, how, you know, the seat control, whatever it is. And it turns out that's what the audience likes the most too. So it's fine. I have this second channel, although I've started putting most of my second channel videos on my main channel, but I have that too, where I can do some more experimentation and have a little bit more fun.
I love that you're in the numbers, because now I can ask the nerdy questions. Do you see retention spikes at the like, Because you go, you get, you have a point where you start to drive the car, and like that's a different scene, and everyone knows that. And then you have the Doug score. Is the Doug score the highest part of the video, or like what happens?
No, the Doug score is not the highest, but it often will go higher than the driving. What I have learned is that nobody really cares about the driving. I think there's a few reasons for that. I don't think it's that nobody cares. I just think that people who are casual people will watch the quirks because they're interested, but like casual people who aren't interested in the car, they don't really care how it drives. It's people who want to buy the car that maybe want to see, okay, what does it drive like? And that's a lot less people than actually watch the video. And then, yeah, people come back for the Doug score, and there are spikes at quirks that are interesting too. So what must happen is people must link people to those exact spots. And then that's where some people start.
Yeah, definitely.
And they recently introduced that feature where you could see where the spikes are and stuff. And I was like, oh my God, I never knew this was really happening.
It's really helpful. It's like, and then because some people will link to that part of the video, but also some people will replay the same thing more than once where they're like, wait a second, I was kind of on cruise control watching this video, but I need to see that again.
Right.
So that's like kind of cool to see. And then you can go back and.
Is it the same for you? Do you see spikes at parts of the video that are more interesting?
I mean, so the intro is obviously we put a lot of effort into the first 10 seconds or so of almost every video. So you'll see that spike, but then you'll see like, there'll be like a certain weird animation or feature that happens where I have to point it out and show it to you on camera, and people will replay that a bunch of times and you see a really big spike, and it's kind of interesting. But yeah, no, it's usually a pretty reasonable curve, I think. I wanted to ask you about your background, because you came from, I guess I would say, a more traditional media. I mean, you were writing basically before you were making videos, and then went to being a YouTuber. Yeah. And in this tech world, there are tech writers and there are tech YouTubers, and the tech YouTubers, I feel like, are still trying to earn some level of respect and consideration that traditional media have always had. Do you find, now that you've been in both worlds, do you find there's a big difference between doing written and doing YouTube in the way you talk to brands and companies, for example?
You know, that's a really interesting question. A lot of people ask me just on a general level, how do the brands handle YouTube? But it's a really interesting question, the difference between writing and YouTube. One important point is I never wrote for print. And in the car space, print is still, probably this isn't true in the tech space anymore, I hope. But print is still in the car space sort of viewed as like the old medium that's the most important. The brands still view it as the most important, which I think is beyond insane. But compared to digital writing versus YouTube, I don't see a huge difference. But I still have an enormous amount of trouble getting some brands to care about YouTube. And I can look at them and say, look, I'll get 2-3 million views. This is more than the circulation of these magazines that you're bending over backwards to try to impress. This is going to be a big thing. And it's still like, you're an influencer, you're not a journalist. We don't, you know, some of the brands have clearly figured it out. But it's amazing because there are studies out there that say over 80% of new car shoppers will watch at least one video before buying. And I think it's probably more like 90 plus, you know, I don't know who's not, right? And I try to tell them that, and it's just kind of there's still an old mentality of that sort of thing. I imagine in the tech space, it's a little bit better, I hope.
I mean, there is some element of both sides to it. Like I think it probably depends on the demographic. I think for a lot of people under probably about 30, somewhere around my age maybe, they look at YouTube and they look at videos just as seriously as they would anything else. If we're buying a phone, for example, like you're going to watch a new video about the phone before it comes out or before you buy it.
Right.
But, you know, there's obviously a lot of older people. Like my grandparents basically can't find a way to acknowledge anything that I do unless it's printed somewhere, and they're like, okay, now that's cool, that is real, like that's very cool. So I always found that funny. And I've recently started contributing to Top Gear magazine, which is a printed magazine, and that was the same like sort of experience. I've been making these autofocus videos for like a couple months now. It's not as many, but Top Gear magazine, oh, that's established, right. That's traditional something. So it's always been there.
It is kind of funny. When this started and people would start coming up to me on the street and recognize me and such, people would say, oh, you're internet famous. And I've tried to, it's an interesting thing. When you get to a certain level, I mean, the internet is it now. I don't know like TV actors anymore, really. Like when I was a kid, you grew up with like Friends and Seinfeld. You knew all those people. If you ever saw one on the street, which I would be like, oh, yeah. My God, this is the craziest thing in the world. But that stuff is fractured and splintered so much that like this is kind of like what it is now. But yes, it's very hard to explain that to older generations. And I still have older relatives being like, so are you still doing that video stuff? You're still doing that?
Yes, Mom.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm doing it. Yeah. Yeah.
So you have people probably in the streets like saying hi to you, probably like recognizing your car and stuff like that?
Yeah, all the time. You know, at least once a day. And it's great. It's always so much fun. Everybody's always really nice. I've never had a negative encounter. Have you?
No. I would say the closest thing I had to a negative encounter was I met someone for the first time outside an event and they immediately started correcting me on something I got wrong in one of my previous videos before even saying their own name.
Yeah, I get those.
Yeah. So I feel like that's in a product related channel. That's probably a feeling people have deep inside when a fact that they know is wrong.
Did the person just have that ammo ready to go in case 100%. They met you? They were like, if I ever meet this dude.
100%. Which is great.
I occasionally get that. Occasionally some like, oh, my car, you know, why didn't you say more nice things? But generally people are really nice. But it's such a bizarre thing that I still like wrestle with. Like, this is so weird. And there's a little bit of anxiety around it, which I don't think most people realize. Like, you can't ever be mean to anybody ever in the public. Like, that can never happen. You can't. And every time you walk into a place, like people are, there's might be a few people who like recognize you. And so you can't like trip over your dog. You know, people are looking.
No, that's real.
Weird. I always have a little more anxiety.
No, I feel like I just tweeted a clip. I don't know if you saw this. I have a Sentry Mode clip on my car, which is just recording when people come near the car of like two people walked up to the car and just started taking pictures in front of it. And that, like, that's fine. That happens. But there's always, like, I can see different versions of that happening. One is someone will walk by and, like, see the car and recognize it from the videos and, like, take a picture of it. And I'm like, right. Oh, that's fine. Cool.
Right.
And then there's this clip, which was this girl, like, leaning on the hood of the car with a photographer taking pictures of her on it. And I was like, that's different. That's not the same thing at all. Really odd. It's a different world to navigate. But yeah, I feel like I have the same experience as you.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
One of my sadnesses as a car person is that I never can have like a clean automotive encounter anymore. Everybody always recognizes me. And so like once a year, someone will come up to me about one of my cars and not recognize me and just talk about the car. And I will savor the hell out of that. I'll keep them there. I'll be like, oh, so anyway, because it's just like, this is a pure car interaction that I get to have. It's so rare because the moment someone recognizes me, and I'm sure you, it becomes they start talking about you and the channel and whatever. And it's like less about the stuff that I'm more into.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a funny thing that I never expected.
No, it's funny. The car culture has more of that than tech culture. Inevitably, when someone meets me, they're like, what phone is in your pocket? Like, what do you like? Sort of that sort of question line where in the car world, I've noticed this, and maybe this is just a small subset of the car world, but at a Tesla supercharger, with the newest Tesla, other people charging there will get out their car and be like, hey, how do you like it? Like, tell me about the car. And often they're not asking you about your own channel. They're like interested about the car. Yeah, and so the car culture is kind of neat in that way, I found.
Can we talk about the Can we talk about the plan?
I would like to, because I feel like I saw one in your new video, but it wasn't part of the video. It was like a teaser. You had it in front of you.
Yes. I got a video going up. I got a video going up on it soon, but I will reveal my thoughts.
Okay. I would love that.
And I listened to your podcast on it, so I already generally know yours, but I think it was insane. I think it's one of the craziest and coolest cars that I've ever experienced in my entire life. And I'm not like, I know that you're a big electric car fan. I'm not like the hugest Tesla guy. I love their products. I think they're, to me, they feel a little bit, they're less like enthusiasty and emotional to me than a lot of cars, but I think they're great for a laot of people and I recommend them to a lot of people. But I think Plaid is the first one that I like emotionally connected with. And I was telling people when I got home, like, I think I'll remember for as long as I live, like, three major events in my career YouTubing about cars so far. One was like driving the Ferrari F40, which was like my first true vintage supercar, very special. Another was the first time I sat behind the wheel of Super Cruise, which was like the first of those driver assist technologies I had been in. It was on my 30th birthday and the car was changing lanes. And I was like, the future is here. And I think number three will be pushing the throttle down in Plaid and feeling that acceleration.
Yeah.
I was like astonished by how that felt. And you're just cruising around in this thing.
It is very, it's wild to me. A couple things. One, that's just going to be in the hands of regular people. Like I am a regular person. I was able to order one and now I have it. And that is now a possible thing to happen. Wild. I was so curious. So Tesla doesn't have a PR department. So I'm always curious how people's Tesla experiences happen. Did you met an owner or did you get, how did you even find one?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. And the way that it always happens for me is, an owner reaches out. And it's always the best because I actually prefer it like that for any car I can where I can get an owner is best because there's no BS you have to deal with the manufacturer. You don't have to worry if they're going to cut off your flow for future cars, whatever. So I actually kind of like it with Tesla that it always just ends up being a guy. So yeah, it was an owner. A bunch of owners reached out to me. The car happened to come out like the first deliveries were like the day I went on a long vacation. And so by the time I got back, I was like already getting like conspiracy theory emails. Like, you haven't reviewed this because you're being paid by the other manufacturers not to review Teslas. And I was like, oh my God. Yes, I need to review one.
Yeah.
But so I went to an owner and I just kind of, filmed the whole thing and then drove around and
I think it's probably I didn't expect to notice a difference because I've driven a performance Model S for years. And, I've driven Taycan and I've driven McLarens and I've never expected to really feel a big difference in acceleration. I assumed it would always be incremental. And I think I was driving it back to the studio from picking it up, which is, it was maybe a 20 something minute drive. And I was like, oh, I'm going to baby this thing. Like, I'm going to get it wrapped in a week. I don't want to do anything crazy. And then I got to a stoplight and I was like, well, it is in Plaid mode. So let me just give it one. And I don't know if I've ever cursed that many times in such a short amount of time. It was unbelievable.
It's hard to explain. I got lucky because I got my initial reaction on camera and I've never, it was so insane. And like you said, regular people, when I was a kid, if you went and got like a Lamborghini Diablo, first off, you had to kind of have some skill. Those were not easy cars to drive. It was a heavy clutch. You had to know how to drive a manual. You had to be able to get in and out. And they weren't that fast, right? They were 0 to 60 in 5 seconds or something. Now, like any lawyer can just show up at a Tesla store in the mall, right? And order the fastest car in human history. That's it insane. Is. That's the craziest
it thing.
Are you fearful of this? You know how fast this thing is. Aren't you scared that there's going to be some crazy accident?
You know what? It's the last one was super fast too. So like I'm not more scared about this one. It's just like the ability to do crazy things has always been there. It's just it's so easy this time. Like you mentioned, like there are other older cars where you could go fast, but you had to know how to use it. Where like more so than ever, you just stomp it and all-wheel drive is just like, now you're going 140. And you're like, what do you mean? It shouldn't be that easy. So I don't know. I'm glad you got your hands on the car and I can't wait for that video.
Yeah, me too. I'm really excited for the video too. I'm excited to see it go up. It's super desired. And I've never done a Model S video before because it was by the time I started filming cars, it was kind of old or, and so this is like a big deal for the channel. The Plaid is and it's so insane. It's so, so insane.
You want to drop any exclusives about the Doug score? You want to give any hints, any surprises?
I haven't. I don't score them until like the video is being edited. But I can't imagine just sitting here thinking about it. And when I was thinking about it at the time, how is it not the highest Doug score? When you think about the practicality of it, and I mean, it's amazing to me, the world's fastest accelerating car. One of the selling points on Tesla's website is that you can fit a bicycle in the back without taking off
two.
The wheel.
I've done two know. In the back. Yes. Yeah.
Think about that. Like the Ferrari, the LaFerrari, mm-hmm. that wasn't one of the things you could do with that car. That wasn't in the list of things. And here we are. Like it's incredible. It's just an amazing feat, yeah. to be honest. And there's a lot of people out there, and especially there's a lot of car people out there, and I'm sure you've noticed this, who are anti-Tesla and anti-electric car. And I try to be super objective. And I love gas-powered cars, and I love the old school and the engines and shifting gears, and I have several manual transmission cars. But how do you not?
It seems like
– think this is
a yeah. thing? No, I feel like I know a good amount of car people that I've seen that have a bunch of cars in the garage and daily drive a Tesla. And I always found that fascinating. And it, yep. to me, it's like the reason yep. I got the car is because I believe it's pretty much the best available daily driver. Like it's a fun performer. It has a ton of space. It's got the tech, like everything about it is great. But it's always interesting to me seeing, you know, people with like 7, 8, 9 cars who daily drive the Tesla. And it's like, that makes a lot of sense.
I think you're right. I think like in terms of an overall car, how do you possibly come up with a better, I like the Taycan too, by the way. And frankly, I may have chosen that before I drove Plaid, but this was like, it was almost like a religious experience.
I was in the same boat.
Pushing that throttle.
Same boat. I reviewed the Taycan. I was like, this is the one I would get if it could supercharge, and I'd take it all yep. back. So now you mentioned.
Yep. Yeah. Here's the question. How does it improve from here?
Oh, God. You know?
What are they going
to
do next?
Well, everyone now is referring to the Roadster because the Roadster is the two-door, specifically sport-focused version. They can go to the next level. It's a $250,000 car. They can really focus on performance. But, like, I have a really hard time picturing a car actually feeling faster than that. Right. So they have to do, right. they got to do something else exciting, right? I mean, it's a two-door, it's a coupe, it's got space, but like.
And the thing about Roadster, I'm sure it'll be cool. I'm sure it'll handle better and like be a real, but the problem is when you start getting into that price point, the accessibility factor is lost and it almost gets into one of those like, well, it better be whatever True. Because it costs that much. And obviously it's going to be faster than gas-powered cars that cost equivalent, but $250 is still an enormous True. Amount of money and it's not feasible for most people. I think that's one of the coolest things about Plaid. It's not like $140 is mm-hmm. cheap. But when you look at what it can do, $140
when it compares to every performance comparison is with a 7-digit car, then you know that it's probably a bit of an outlier
yeah.
there. Yeah. You mentioned, so you got it from an owner, but you've dealt with car companies in the past, like review units is what they're sort of referred to in the tech world. Do you have any like review unit horror stories or is it mostly smooth sailing? Cause with cars, it's a little different. I've had cars for a couple days or a week or so. And it's like, you have to deal with insurance more and you have to deal with like, what right. if there's rock chips on the car when you give it back and how many miles you're allowed to put on it. So it's a little different.
Right. Right. Yeah. They send the press cars. I really, for a very long time, I tried to avoid any press cars because I always felt that if the manufacturer is providing you with something, mm-hmm. then, you know, there's a question of objectivity there. And so for years, I wouldn't take press cars or I would take one every couple months or something. But when COVID happened, my wife and I were trying to get pregnant and I just didn't want to go to car dealerships, which are like notoriously some of the most conservative, but I didn't want to deal with any of that stuff. So I started getting more press cars coming in and that started to come in. And so I do that a lot more now, although I still think it's kind of a 50-50 split with owners and press cars. Yeah, the cars come to your house with a full tank of gas and fully washed. And I know some car journalists who don't possess a personal car. And so at that point, you have to wonder, these guys need this to continue, wow. right? Like, are they really being objective? They can't. And meanwhile, these are car people car journalists who don't own a car. I know many of them yeah. who don't. And so I always try to kind of resist that thing. But yeah, they show up and then you have it for a week or whatever and you provide your impressions. The one big benefit to it, even as questionable as all that sounds, and I still think it's very ethically dubious, having a car for a week, you really do get the chance to, you drive it at night, you drive it in traffic, you drive it in rain, and you get the chance to really kind of experience it more than me showing up at a guy's house, driving it for an hour, filming it for 4 hours, and then it's not quite the same.
Yeah, that was always my challenge with car videos is I want to spend more time with them. Like a phone, like, one of the common questions I get is, how long does it take you once you've gotten the thing to figure, to feel like you know it well enough to give your impressions or whatever? Like with headphones, I can spend 3 hours with a pair of headphones and know everything about them. Short of like battery life, I can know everything about a pair of headphones. You give me a smartphone, it's like, okay, I want to go through the battery cycle a few times. Give me like 4, 5, 6 days before I really feel like I know this very well.
Really?
And I think that's pretty short, because in a lot of worlds where you don't know phones as well as someone who's used 1,000 phones, you need more time. But for a car, it's like, yeah, I'd want at least a week. I'd want a weekend, and I'd want a week where I'm commuting in it and all this sort of stuff. How long?
And then you think about, there's 30 car manufacturers, and they're each coming out with 3 new cars a year. And so if you really wanted a week with each one, it's actually not, when you think it's not actually possible, right? And that kind of starts to become a little bit of the trend.
How long is the longest you've spent with a review car? And how long is the shortest?
The shortest is like when I show up at somebody's house, and I'll usually try to drive it for an hour and film it for 4. And when you're climbing in and out of it and touching everything and whatever, you can get enough of a feel for it that it's enough to make a video and enough that you feel comfortable with the driving experience to an extent. It's like you just said, like if you've done a million of these, you have a generally okay idea, at least when you're getting started. One other big benefit is if I'm reviewing the latest Mercedes-Benz, it generally has a lot of stuff from other, you know, there's not that much enough. I just shot the new Mercedes S-Class though, and that has a ton of new technology. And so that was like, I was there the whole day trying to get a handle on all that stuff. And it takes a little longer. In terms of the longest, like the press cars come for a week. And so that's usually the longest. And depending on the car, I'll drive it for the whole time, or sometimes I'll just only drive it a few times or whatever. It kind of depends on what it is.
I want to go actually back to Tesla real quick, because there's one other thing that I haven't actually ever asked anybody about this, but you'd be the person to ask. So it feels like the number one contradiction of Tesla to me is their number one feature is really, really fun to drive. Crazy acceleration, decent enough handling, like video game type stuff. And then number two is autopilot. You won't have to drive these things. How are those the top two? Like, have you thought about this at all? Like, the yoke steering wheel is another thing that comes to mind. Like, I'm getting used to the yoke. It's been like 2 weeks for me. And like the answer you get from them is, well, eventually you won't need steering wheels, so we cut off the top half so you can see the autopilot visualization behind the screen. And all of that is technically true, but also you just made a car that goes 0 to 60 faster than anything else ever made. You should have a great steering wheel. You know what I mean? Like, how do they reconcile this?
It's an interesting question, but don't you think that their thought is they want the highest tech product, and so to do that, they have to have autopilot and that sort of thing. But they also need it to, like, autopilot alone wouldn't make it desirable enough, right? Like, a lot of brands have a similar system now. The car has to also be cool as hell. And in order to do that, then you make it be, and also truthfully for me, like, I don't own a Tesla, but it's clearly trending in that direction. And I'm like Mr. Car Guy. I've got 6 cars, whatever. I love nothing more than the concept of sitting in traffic and emailing people while the car drives. And this is kind of sacrilege in the car community saying this, but like, I have a bunch of fun cars that I take out on the weekend and really enjoy. When I'm sitting in bumper to bumper traffic driving from LA to San Diego after filming, I don't want to do that. I got this business to run. I got the channel to manage. I got people I got to reply. I don't want to do that. And so there is something to be said for having a car that does do both, frankly, even though those seem contradictory.
Yeah, it's like I would want it to be really good at both. So the point where it like takes away from one or the other is where it gets confusing to me. Like that's where the yoke steering wheel got so confusing, and like the most fun car to drive that they've ever made is also the most annoying steering wheel.
You find the steering wheel to be annoying? I don't think it's
okay,
that.
Okay, so the steering wheel itself is not the annoying part. The buttons on the wheel, yes, still very annoying.
So is turn signals your biggest complaint?
Right now it's the headlights, because they are too far from my thumb to like be resting and get to them, and the horn on the other side.
Yeah.
The blinkers I'm getting used to, but then like still sometimes in my maneuvering of the yoke, I will brush a button or a blinker or like hit the windshield wipers for some reason. And it's just, it's kind of embarrassing that that happens.
It's not the ideal implementation. You know, it's interesting because Ferrari also has all the stuff as buttons on the wheel, but they implemented it a little bit better, especially turn signals. Ferrari has left turn signal on the left side and right turn signal on the right side, which I think is really nice as opposed to having them next to each other, which is a little bit tough. And yeah, the horn thing, like, come on, just put it in the middle. I still think that Tesla does a few things for the sake of being different, which can get a little bit annoying. And that's kind 100%. Of
100%. Also, are the Ferraris, is it physical buttons or is it touch buttons?
Ferrari, well, actually, it's an interesting question. They for years and years, they were physical buttons, but the two newest Ferraris now have little touch buttons.
Okay. Like the Tesla. I'm pretty sure I plan to be testing the, I'm going to forget the name, the Stradale,
the SF90 is the one.
That's one of the most.
Yeah, that's moved to the touch buttons. And then the Roma, their other new product, they both have those now. And that's been really controversial. Even the engine start stop button is a touch. Yeah. It's crazy in a Ferrari. Like when I was a younger older Ferraris, you twist the key and you hear the motor fire up. And now you get in and you tap a screen. It's the emotion is a little bit lost and it's kind of a strange
way. So you've also tested the electric Hummer, which I wanted to ask you about. You didn't get to drive it either, right? We just had this super precious prototype, which I imagine is the same one that was in the shade for you, had to be in the shade for me. Yeah. Yep. What do you make of the Hummer going electric? Because I know I'm not a big Hummer person, but I see a 9,000-pound Hummer, and I don't imagine that buyer cares at all about going electric.
You know, I would think that too, but this Wrangler 4XE has become tremendously popular, even in just the few months that it's been out, which is the plug-in hybrid Wrangler, and that only does like 20 miles on a single charge. I have several friends already who have gotten them, and they love them. And that clearly shows there's a market for this stuff. The Hummer is so insane. I think that's the same thing with the Hummer. The performance is there. And so that alone, like, it can do all this stuff. And so I think there's going to be people who buy it who are like, I don't care if it's electric or not. And the other thing to keep in mind, it's kind of funny. Everybody associates pickup trucks with the middle of the country, and those buyers are not going to go electric and blah, blah. And that's probably true. But crazy pickup trucks are primarily sold to wealthy people on the coast, like the Ford Raptor. All the sales for that are in the East Coast and in California. That's where all those people are. And they'll go electric if it means they can get, you know, 0-60 in 3 seconds and roll 15 inches of ground clearance or whatever it is. They'll do that all the time.
Yeah, that's like the ultimate. That's what's funny about like the Cybertruck and the F-150 Lightning is like, I feel like I'm talking to two very different groups of people. Because I'm talking about a truck on one hand where it's like utility matters and this thing can power your tools and it's got a huge amount of covered storage and look at all this great utility. Don't you want this better truck? But then there's also this like premium electric vehicle enthusiast who's like, I never wanted a truck, but this one is sick. Like I ordered a Cybertruck. I don't need a truck. But how many million people are in the same boat? Like the Cybertruck's kind of cool and I'm an electric car person. So here we are. It's fascinating.
Do you not feel that the Cybertruck is the ugliest thing that you've ever seen in your entire life?
Okay, you know what's funny about that?
You don't think that?
It isn't actually ugly to me. It does have a very strange look. It looks like a 2D render sometimes. Like I've only seen it in person once, and I've seen it in various videos. But to me, it's like the brutish nature of it is kind of endearing. Like they don't care about looking good, which is like kind of cool to me. I don't know why. It's just interesting. But then also like, it's just a tool. Like it doesn't have to look that great.
Right. I'm interested to see how that will go. A lot of people that I know who have never had a truck are interested in that or claim to be. I think that a lot of people don't realize how big trucks are. And I think that will be a huge wake up call for a lot of people. People who live in like the city and go to Trader Joe's, they think they want this thing. I don't think they quite realize. They don't drive trucks frequently. I drive trucks to review. And even still, when I get into a pickup truck, not even a heavy duty, just a regular F-150 or whatever, I get in and I'm like, this thing is huge. I would not want this in anything other than a rural area or like an exurb or something like that.
Trying to park one of those.
It's not, and I think all these city people who like coming from a Model 3,
the city is the last place I'd want the Cybertruck. Other than parking, which is pretty funny because in the city when it snows and there's just snowbanks everywhere and parking is horrific. You just pull up on like a snowbank or whatever. Who's going to stop you? Park? You're going to give me a ticket? I'm just on a snowbank. I don't know. Funny. There's a lot of like, just the questionable like nature of Cybertruck and whether it will actually be able to ship as is and all this other, like I put in an order and I expect them to make what they showed me, but they're obviously always making changes. So who knows?
It's already become clear to me. I don't know what you think of this, but they're not going to hit end of year.
No.
I mean, that's going to happen. I got in fights with people about that. People on my Twitter were saying this, the Cybertruck's going to beat the Hummer EV to market. It may still, but it'll come by the end of the year, Elon said. And I'm like,
no. No, I am firmly in the camp of electric cars are harder to make than everyone thinks, including Tesla. So, yeah. So Elon time is real. Like that will not come out when they say it will. Neither will the Roadster, which was like 5 years ago or something crazy, by the way. I do think, though, one of the biggest observations I've always had about these new EVs when they get announced is they're always announced for sometime way in the future. And they always get compared to like other things in the future versus it. Like it's hard to compare stuff out today with stuff in the future is what I always say. So like F-150 Lightning might come out next year, maybe. Are we supposed to compare it during its announcement with other stuff available today? Or should I compare it with other stuff that also doesn't exist that will also maybe come out next year? You don't do a ton of like direct head-to-head comparisons, but do you ever think about that?
And I especially try to avoid future stuff in part because of that, because you end up with a lot of stuff that just, I don't put a lot of faith in what companies tell me. I still remember when I went on the launch of the Mazda 6, which is like a little midsize sedan, and they told me, they said, this was in 2013 maybe, they said the diesel version is just 6 months away. And that never came out. But they were very firm at that launch that the diesel version was six months away. And I don't know. I always think about things like that. It's a little bit difficult, when an automaker comes out. And yes, I generally don't do a lot of head-to-head stuff. I just find people like to focus on individual cars. When I have relevant experience, I will talk about that like during the video, like, oh, this truck is whatever. But having the two next to each other, it makes things way more logistically complicated. And I found that it just sort of, for some reason, diffuses interest a little bit, at least on my channel. I noticed that some channels do a little better with head-to-head stuff, but I've found the opposite.
Yeah, unless it's like two really, really obvious rivals, it's usually not as interesting. But I also think what you said, I think it's healthy to not just blindly trust everything that comes from a company just because there's so many different variables and so many different people who are talking to each other that your own experience will trump that every time. Like just go with what actually exists. Right. And also in the tech world, I have a saying, only buy something based on what it is now today and not on the promise of some future, especially with software updates.
Right.
They'll software tell you updates, something's coming and must be, it would be nice if it does come out, but don't buy it if you wouldn't like it without that thing, because it might not ever happen.
Right, and in some cases, it might not come, or it might come in a year, and then you've purchased it and used it for a year without that thing. That happens, yeah, and it happens in the car world too, honestly, and for sure. Buy what you like. Buy the thing that you're seeing and you're walking up to and looking at and playing with today. I totally agree with that.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brené Brown, and this is Unlocking Us. In this podcast, we'll explore ideas, stories, experiences, research, books, films, music, anything that reflects the universal experiences of being human, from the bravest moments to our most brokenhearted moments. Some episodes will be conversations with the people who are teaching me, challenging me, confusing me, maybe ticking me off a little bit. And some days I'll just talk directly to you about what I'm learning and how it's changing the way I think and feel. The first episodes are out now. We're going to do 3 or 4 part series every quarter, so about 12 to 15 episodes a year. Unlocking Us will always drop on Wednesdays. And now you can find me wherever you normally listen to your podcasts. You can get new episodes as soon as they are published by following Unlocking Us on your favorite podcast app. And as always, stay awkward, brave, and kind.
But yeah, it's an interesting world. And yes, the you know, part of the problem, I think, with the believing what companies say is an interesting concept. You know, the Tesla Twitter people are just a completely different level of insane that I've never experienced before. And what that company says is the word of God to them, and that they don't believe that there's ever any and I'm pretty positive about Teslas compared to most car reviewers. And yet I can still get in. I still get like vicious complaints from some of these people sometimes because I don't believe this thing.
Yeah, they might be the most defended cars by people who have never actually used them, which is very strange to me because in the tech world, there are rampant fanboys of certain companies and products, even if they don't use them. Like a product will come out from a company they love. And even if they've never used it, they will trust the gospel that is that company's advertising messaging. And if your review goes against it, you must be paid or you must be a shill or you're a fanboy of the other guy.
The frequency of which I'm accused of being paid is quite unbelievable. I'm sure you get this also. I don't get it as much as I see some other people get it, as much as I expect. I think it's really clear that I try to be really objective, but still, like, and some of the stuff I'm being accused of being paid about is so insane. And I'm just like, what could you possibly be thinking? But that's, I guess, the reality when you're dealing with the general public.
Yeah, there's got to be a reason why you don't like the same thing I like. Maybe it's because you're paid. I don't know.
Right.
That's.
It can't be because my taste is wrong or our tastes differ or whatever. And the other thing, the thing that really is crazy to me, I suspect you don't see this quite as much because the gadgets you're reviewing are less valuable, although you probably do. But in the car world, the amount of personal investment people have in the cars is insane. I frequently make fun of my own cars. Like, they're unreliable. I own this convertible Mercedes G-Wagon, which I think is one of the ugliest cars ever made. I talk about that. I'm like totally fine with all that. But when I say something like negative like that about somebody else's car, people, it's like you insulted their child.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how could you take a possession this personally? I never have understood that.
You know what's
that
funny
behavior.
About that? I think it's I actually understand that in the car world because that is probably one of the top two most expensive, important buying decisions you make. And so in a way, it reflects a lot about you and your priorities and your knowledge of the things you could have done, right? So if you spend all that effort and energy and you make this huge purchase in your life and someone says something bad about it, you kind of feel like you need to defend yourself against it. But in the tech world, I see a very high level of this around smartphones. And I think it's because not that they're super valuable, but because they are some of the most personal pieces of tech that you can possibly own. What is more personal?
Oh, interesting. It's always with you. It has all your equipment.
It runs your life, basically. You're holding it all the time. It's a borderline fashion accessory to some people. Like, to speak negatively about someone's smartphone purchase decision would be like speaking negatively about their hairstyle or something. It's like, that's a part of me. And that's the way people react, which is always funny.
I've never gotten into the things that I possess. I've never gotten into personally defending them. Even the cars. I get that it's an expensive decision, but like, you made it, like, who cares? You know, like, if that's what you decided, then that's what you decided. And I just, I think people are so crazy, but they can be so militant about some of this stuff. And sometimes I will say something in a video and just be like nervous. Like, I know.
Oh,
like,
yeah. You always know. I know there's a these days I like to defend it just by recognizing like smartphones aren't like young anymore. Like, it's kind of hard to get a bad new phone. If you're anywhere in the $300+ price range of new phones from the big companies, like, you can't really get a bad one anymore. Does it feel kind of the same way in the car industry? Like, obviously, if you buy an old car now, it can be bad. But if you buy a new car, it's probably fine.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny. I get sometimes I get friends or family members coming up to me and saying, listen, I've spent hours researching this. I've watched your videos, watched everybody's videos. I'm trying to figure out the best small crossover to buy. Is it the CR-V or the RAV4 or the Mazda CX-5? And they'll be floored when I tell them which dealership is physically closer to your home. Like, we're not talking about – none of these will be bad. Like, you're not going to make a mistake here. There's very, 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 very few bad cars, maybe none on sale right now. And so that makes it things a little bit easier. Yeah, you're not – I'm not ever starting review ripping up a car anymore. It wasn't quite like that when I first started. There were some, like, Maseratis were pretty weak in 4 or 5 years ago, and I did some tough reviews on those that got a lot of pushback. But – generally speaking, sometimes I just find it insane that people can even get to that level of granularity. If it was me, the CX-5 versus the whatever, which sales person was nicer? Yeah. just this is not a decision you need my help with.
Do you have any regrets from things you've said in videos in the past? Things you wish you didn't, maybe wish you edited out or
I always regret when I make a mistake. Feel like this too. Like, And sometimes they're small, but sometimes, like, I still lie awake at night, you know. But no, I don't think I've ever been wrong, you know.
Yeah, there's being a little bit wrong where it's like maybe you slip and say the wrong number or the wrong part name or whatever, but it doesn't substantially change the point you were trying to make. And then there's like being wrong where you're like, this is bad when it wasn't bad, or this is
Making an objective individual mistake, like a number or something, those are annoying. I always wish I could take them out. I see the flood of emails starts coming in immediately, and I'm like, oh crap. But actually being wrong about a review, I don't know. I like to think that I got them all right. The viewers may have different opinions, but that's kind of the whole point of this. You know, that's kind of what we're doing here. The thing that annoys me the most, probably, and maybe you get this as well, the people who tell you that you missed something is really annoying to me. My videos are very long. I've got this Bronco video going up. It's gonna be 40 minutes long. I had to cut five. I don't go over 40. I just think that's insane. I had to cut 5 minutes even to get to that point. But I'm gonna get emails from people saying, oh, you missed this, you missed that. And it's like, no, I generally don't miss this stuff, but at some point you're just, it's too much. And that's the one that gets to me. It's like, I'm not wrong. I didn't miss it.
Yeah, I feel like that's why I loved your review of the Corolla, where you looked at the inside of that car and it was just like, oh, there isn't actually anything here. you really can't say anything about this like blank slate of a car. I thought that was great.
Right.
That was fun.
Yeah, that was an easy one. A ton of people watch that. I should do more like that. It's harder when there's more stuff, but some of these cars, there's so much stuff. Plaid was like that, honestly. There's so much crazy stuff to cover that it's actually a little bit difficult to cover it all within the span that I've allotted myself. Even 40 minutes, I think, is so long, but sometimes
you I'm planning a full review of the Model S, and like I made my first impressions video, which was like, oh, I've had it for literally like 3 days, and here's 25 minutes of me spitting out things I think about this car, where like I think my review is probably going to be like 45 minutes long, because there's like the charging infrastructure, there's all these other things to talk about with owning the car. But
my biggest problem with when it comes to timing and stuff is that, and a lot of people don't quite understand the perspective that I put myself in, I have to make the videos for both the in-market car shopper who wants every single piece of information, and also the casual fan who just wants to sort of browse videos before they go to bed and doesn't want overload. And it's almost, in the car review space, it's almost unique. There's only a couple other channels that sort of speak to both, and it's a tough kind of line to walk.
No, I was going to say that's another thing we probably have in common, is like I can kind of divide my audience into two similar buckets, which is when a new piece of tech comes out, there are the people who are going to search for it and find the video who are thinking about buying it, and there are the people who are going to watch a new MKBHD video for entertainment. And if you can talk to both of those people, that's a win, but it's harder than it sounds. Yeah.
It is. I think people don't quite understand that. The guys who want the new Bronco and they want to know every little detail, they're not going to be satisfied if you only do 20 minutes. Meanwhile, the other people, they don't want to hear about how the subscription feature works in the infotainment. And it is kind of a tough thing. And I think a lot of people don't. Yeah. It's harder than it seems. The whole YouTube thing turns out to be a little bit more difficult.
It's tough. We've had some years to get better at it, but it's definitely tough. I don't know if you heard about this, but we're doing an end of podcast test for every guest we have on. And the test is, I have a URL I'm going to send you, and it's just a simple typing test of typing the entire alphabet from A to Z. You remember on Top Gear, they'd have like a a leaderboard of driving an ordinary car around a track. Yeah. And like, you could sort of like line yourself up and be like, oh, that's cool. This person did better. This is our version of that. So I'm going to send you the type test and we can see how you score and how you do. And there's no pressure at all. Right. You can give it one or two or three shots even. Do you see the chat section?
Oh, really?
I'll give you three shots because I feel like the first try you kind of learn how it works and then you get two more.
Do you have to use capital letters?
No, you just straight button mash until you get from A to Z. That's it.
Oh, this is easy.
And then all you got to do is send me a screenshot of whichever your best time is.
Time? Wow. Okay. All right. I'm ready. Give me one sec. Okay. Here goes. Oh, damn it. What if you mess up?
Now
you
gotta just get to Z.
Okay. So if you okay, all right, fine, whatever. I'm just gonna do it. I'm not worried. All right, here goes. Boom. 6.753. Okay. You're gonna let me do it again?
Yeah, that was your second try. 6.753.
Yeah, although the first try I put L in front of K, so I kind of stopped. What does that count?
It counts, all right. But that's why I'm giving everybody three tries, because the third try is always the best. Okay. So now you know exactly how it works.
Okay, here it goes. Ready?
No pressure. No pressure.
Boom, 5.9. Nice. What have other 5, people 9 got?
5.9 flat? That's pretty good.
5.9 flat. I'm going to send you a
beautiful
screenshot.
We did this on Twitter, and first I got a bunch of really good, like, 3, 2.5 crazy responses, and then people started figuring out how to game it, and they'd write scripts, and they'd get 0.1 seconds, so...
Yeah, I noticed the leaderboard here. Somebody did it in 0.16.
Yeah, I don't know how many of those to trust, but we will do this live with all of our podcast guests and figure out who's the true typing king. So,
did you do this with Mr. Beast?
I should. Next time he's on.
So I have no one to compare this against.
We have. Do you, Adam? What do you remember from our previous?
Yours was 4.539.
I got 4.5.
Oh my God, that's third crazy. Try.
Andrew got down to 5.2, but we've got a couple others in the studio. Oh. I think there's a couple at like 5 or 6 seconds. So there's a healthy range. I think it'll be fun. It'll be interesting.
This was too slow. If I had, I needed to prepare substantially better. Everybody else is going to be able to prepare, like the Top Gear Star thing. You know, they're going to get like
that's
lessons.
True. We got to keep it a surprise as many as people as we possibly can. Doug, thank you. Thank you for hopping on the podcast. I know you're a busy guy, so I don't want to take all of your day, but this was really fun.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we should do it again sometime, and I am really looking forward to that Plaid review. Your Model S review video is coming soon.
Yes. Thank you, and I'm so jealous that you have one. Enjoy.
I certainly will. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
Take care.
See ya.
So that was Doug DeMuro. That was a lot of fun. I always enjoy talking to fellow creators, but obviously when we have a lot in common, it's great. Were you impressed with his type test time?
He did pretty good.
It's pretty good.
He beat half the people that work here. I mean, Podcast Crew's still on top, still representing, but I'm sure we will get beat eventually.
He had a really good point that, you know, you can only get caught off guard for so long. It's kind of like when you watch Hot Ones and guests are ready for the sauce.
Yeah.
I feel like people are going to start preparing for the alphabet test. We'll see.
You know, they still have to face the pressure in that, though. I mean, people for the reasonably priced card could have prepared for it.
True.
There's nothing against that, so they might.
True.
This is much easier to do. But anyways, great episode. That was really fun to listen to.
Yeah, I think this studio is built to start having guests and have more people hang out with us and chat. Of course, creators, but all sorts of people from the industry. We'll, of course, also have people on virtually like we just did, but let us know what other types of guests you'd like to have on, because we are all about starting that up.
Yeah, for sure.
Either way, that's been it. Until the next one, catch you guys later. Peace.
This week's... I can't do that. I feel like I'm so bad. This week's episode was produced by Adam Molina. We are partnered with Studio 71, and our intro-outro music was created by Vane Sill.
Hi. We're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right. $25 a month? Every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.